Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the fallout on Wall Street from the new book Flash Boys by Michael Lewis and the recent 60 Minutes expose of high-speed trading that reached the conclusion that the stock market is rigged. William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World, and a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, joins us to discuss Wall Street's rigged system that allows favored investors to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to locate their computers close to stock exchange data centers so they can trade milliseconds ahead of ordinary investors, thus front-running the market. Then we'll get an update from David Gleave, a chief investigator for aviation safety investigations and an expert with the Transport Research Group at Loughborough University in the UK. Weeks ago, when the Malaysian airliner first disappeared, he predicted it was deliberately flown into the remote southern Indian Ocean so that it will never be found. We will discuss the latest turn in the investigation that is focusing on a psychological profile of the pilot and co-pilot and whether the plane's black box can be found before it stops transmitting its location, which, based on the life of its battery, may be only a week away. Then finally, we'll examine the Ebola breakout in Guinea, which an official with Médecins Sans Frontières says is unprecedented. We will get an understanding of how bad it is and whether it will get worse from Dr. Stuart Nicol, chief of the Viral Special Pathogens Branch at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia. He is currently leading the U.S. response to the Ebola breakout in Guinea that has now spread to neighboring Liberia. And joining us now is William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. William Cohan is a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, where he covers a variety of financial issues. His book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns. He also wrote The Last Tycoon, The Secret History of Lazard, Frère and Company. And his new book coming out soon is The Price of Silence, which is about the 2006-2007 Duke LaCrosse scandal. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Cohan.
Thank you, Ian. Great to be here.
And 60 Minutes, a piece on Sunday with Michael Lewis, plugging his new book, Flash Boys, really made some pretty strong statements. When you say that the stock market is rigged, them are fighting words, as they say in the Westerns, you know?
Yeah.
So you're there on Wall Street. You cover Wall Street. How's Wall Street responding?
Well, I worked on Wall Street for 17 years. I was never a broker, but I certainly carefully followed as an M&A, mergers and acquisitions banker, carefully followed the markets. To say they're rigged is, of course, very powerful words, as you said, and certainly gets people's attention. So if you wanted to, promote your book on 60 Minutes, there's probably no better way than to say that the market is rigged. So Michael Lewis is a genius in that regard. The issue of whether high-speed traders have figured out ways to get an advantage over other people in the market is something that, we've known about close to a decade now. Even in June 2011, 60 Minutes did a piece on high-frequency traders, mentioned the words market rigged any number of times. So it's not a subject that's even new to 60 Minutes. I think that, the genius of Michael Lewis is that his ability to sort of find somebody that basically nobody had ever heard of who felt aggrieved by this, i.e. the executive at Royal Bank of Canada that he identified, who then started his own exchange that is now the subject of Michael Lewis's book, and figured out that something didn't feel right, that he would try to make trades and the people would jump in front of him, and then he tried to figure out a way to circumvent that. And when he successfully did that, he marketed that to all sorts of clients and then decided to go out on his own. But I think in truth the stock market has probably been I don't know whether rigged is the right word, but certainly a market that advantages the big traders, and it's been that way for a very, very long time, and it's always been a rough place for small traders, as we all have found out on numerous occasions over the last 100 years. And so, you know, again, the genius of Michael Lewis is to take something that everybody kind of knows about already and craft a nice little story in a soundbite and get a lot of attention, which he certainly has done.
And the trader that you're talking about, Brad Katsuyama, he's built an alternative electronic exchange called IEX. But the 60 Minutes piece and the book by Michael Lewis basically suggest that the people who are to blame are the hedge funds and investment banks engaged in high-frequency trading. And my understanding is that it's the real villains here are the big stock exchanges, which are enabling and at the same time profiting from the extra fast trading access that they provide to certain investors. And specifically, we're talking here about the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, and BATS, B-A-T-S, which apparently is the they're the people who pioneered this electronic exchanges. So that's what's going on, right? You give your favored entities, whoever they might be, access as close as possible to the New York Exchange so that there's a millisecond advantage because the pipeline doesn't have to go very far, the electronic pipeline. Is that the situation?
Well, that's the theory, right? I think, you know, one of the, again, I've not yet had a chance to read Michael's book, but just, you know, in the 60 Minutes piece and then the pieces in New York Times Magazine and then I think Andrew Ross Sorkin's column in the New York Times today sort of made the point that you made, that the exchanges are getting the advantage. I mean, the thing that I found, you know, disturbing and not new, but disturbing, continuously disturbing, is the fact that some of these exchanges are front-running their clients. So taking the information that's coming into the exchange about the trade that a hedge fund wants to make or an investment bank wants to make, and the people behind these high-frequency trading operations are seeing that information and trading on it a millisecond before the actual order can get executed, which is why the fellow at Royal Bank of Canada couldn't get his trades executed, which is why he decided on this sort of slowdown method, which was, you know, sort of the light bulb moment for him. But again, you know, unfortunately, and it's not pretty, but people, even under the old ticker tape method, traders on the New York Stock Exchange would read the tape and trade on that information before their clients. And so this is something that has gone on for a very long time. I think, you know, Michael Lewis has made it sexier by focusing on high-speed trading and milliseconds and exchanges and, you know, showing route maps of fiber optic cable between lower Manhattan and the exurbs of New Jersey. But, you know, people, like in my book about Goldman Sachs, I talk about how Goldman has often been criticized for trading ahead of its clients and taking its clients' information and using every piece of it to Goldman's advantage. And even I interviewed any number of clients in that book who were aware that Goldman was doing it, but decided that, you know, all things being equal, they'd still rather have Goldman's expertise in executing whatever assignment they wanted them to execute rather than go to somebody who may not be doing that because of the expertise that Goldman brings. I mean, the markets have always been an uneven playing field. If you don't think big clients get an advantage over small clients, big clients who are doing hundreds of millions of dollars of fee-generating business every year with Wall Street and the exchanges don't get preferential treatment and haven't gotten preferential treatment for a very long time over small clients and customers, then, you know, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn that I'd like to sell you real cheap, because this has been going on for hundreds of years.
Now, in terms of your book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World, William Cohan, the 60 Minutes piece actually suggested that Goldman Sachs, who apparently were one of the first in on this high-frequency trading racket, shall we call it, they apparently are in favor of these new rules that this trader who set up this new exchange wants to implement. But at the same time, Goldman Sachs is underwriting an initial public offering for Virtue Financial, which specializes in high-frequency trading. So there you have speaking with a forked tongue, to use another analogy out of the Westerns.
Well, that is the Goldman Sachs business plan, business model to a T. I mean, you've got to give them credit. Obviously, they knew the content, by and large, of what was going to be in Michael's book. He had done a piece for Vanity Fair, of course, where I also write, about a technician at Goldman Sachs who was claimed to, Goldman claimed, stole some code from Goldman, and of course he claimed that it was open source code. And so, I mean, Goldman knew that Michael Lewis's book was going to stir up a hornet's nest, so intelligently, I think, they had Gary Cohn, the president of Goldman Sachs, write an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal late last week, basically coming out in support of the new exchange that was created and sort of, you know, fair trading, which, of course, you know, definitely benefits Goldman Sachs. It definitely benefits their clients because, you know, Goldman stands to benefit through, you know, fair, you know, more, you know, openness and people feeling more confident in the market. I mean, frankly, it's hard for people to feel less confident in the market than, you know, than people do now, especially when, you know, they realize that there are people who are getting advantages. So them coming out for something that seems fairer than and that could, in fact, be fair, of course, inures to their benefit. At the same time, of course, you know, if there's a successful high-frequency trader who hasn't lost money in whatever it is, a year's worth of trading days, because they're out in front of everybody and seeing orders before they can get filed, and that company's making a lot of money, well, Goldman was more than happy to take a fee in underwriting that deal and selling it to investors, you know, all over the world. That is, in fact, their business plan. Both things can be true. That's the, you know, kind of the genius, if you will, or the villainy, if that's your preference, of Goldman Sachs. I mean, and much of Wall Street. They're more than willing to take fees whenever an opportunity presents itself. And if there's a PR situation they can get out in front of, they're more than happy to a PR situation that they can get out in front of. They're more than happy to, you know, try to be smart about it and do that. And this is a case where Goldman, for a change, actually was smart in its public relations strategy by getting out ahead of this.
So this business of getting out ahead, of course, is what we're talking about in terms of these high-speed trading. And you mentioned front-running, which is what in fact is happening here, where you buy stocks before somebody is about to buy them and then sell them back to them at a profit. Front-running is illegal. But somehow or other, we're not sure whether high-speed trading is illegal. The FBI apparently have opened up a probe into whether these high-speed trading firms are engaged in insider trading. And one of the things that they're looking into is that there's a method of trading where a firm makes a big order for trades in a company's stock but then cancels them, giving the illusion that the stock is, you know, hot and active. That's just one of them. They're also looking into whether these firms that are trading stocks were granted early information ahead of institutional investors. That on the surface, is obviously illegal. So walk us through why it is that front-running is illegal, but electronic front-running is not.
Well, I mean, people talk about front-running being illegal, and I'm sure that, in fact, I'm not a lawyer, that there might even be laws against it, but I've never heard of a case actually brought. You know, people anecdotally have told me for years that Goldman, as I say, you know, sort of front runs their clients, or has in the past front run their clients, take their clients' information and trade it on it. I, as I say, I cite numerous examples of that in my book, but you know, how does one ever really prove that? How does, I mean, I haven't seen any prosecution of that kind of a charge. you know, Michael Lewis said that this high frequency trading isn't illegal. You know, it wasn't illegal for Goldman Sachs to bet against the mortgage market at the same time that it was underwriting and selling mortgage-backed securities in 2006 and 2007. I mean, there are many things that seem to us to be wrong, but that aren't illegal. You know, and that's a function of the way the laws are written and the way that Wall Street helps to write the laws and knows the specifics of the law down to, you know, a dotted I and the cross T much better than anybody, you know, obviously a layperson would. So my sense is that, you know, it's going to be very, very hard. There'll be a plenty for the FBI to investigate, but I suspect it'll be very, very hard to bring a successful prosecution of this. You know, again, this high-frequency trading has been going on for, you know, 10, 20 years, you know, a long time. Obviously, it's far more sophisticated now than it had been because, you know, you're talking about people co-locating their trading operations, you know, as close as they possibly can to the switches and the data centers over in New Jersey and to try to get that millisecond advantage. The only reason they're doing that, of course, is to try to make money. And you know, again, I haven't seen any laws that say that that's illegal. It doesn't sound right. And I think, again, the beauty of what Michael Lewis has done is, even though we've sort of known about this, he has an ability to raise this to a new level in people's minds and bring it to a wider audience. And, of course, when people hear on 60 Minutes that he says the market is rigged, well, that gets people's attention. And then, of course, his story is so, you know, captivating and well-written and entertaining that, you know, it makes it probably will lead to change. And it might even lead to some of these high-frequency traders being put out of business. And, you know, Goldman Sachs is smart enough to, you know, see where this might be heading and trying to get on the right side of it.
Well, apparently already, William Cohen, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission and the Securities Exchange Commission are both looking into whether these exchanges are giving preferential treatment to these high-speed trading firms, which, of course, seems to be the case. You do have to ask yourself, where was the Securities and Exchange Commission and the CFTC all of these years that you just mentioned? Why weren't they doing it? I mean, let's face it, in 2012, a New Jersey firm, Knight Capital, lost $440 million in a glitch, a computer glitch, executing 150 mistaken orders on the New York Stock Exchange. And then in 2010, in May of 2010, the computerized trading apparently was the reason why there was the flash crash, which briefly sent U.S. markets tumbling by about 5% before the glitch was discovered. So there's another issue there, isn't there? How, you know, not only are people taking advantage of computer trading, but also the computer trading itself is not without its problems.
Well, that is for sure. Of course, we don't know why that flash crash, you know, the layman anyway, doesn't really understand why that flash crash occurred. I mean, the fact that regulators are behind the eight ball on this topic and on many topics is something that I've wondered about, you know, for years. I mean, why were all the regulators nowhere to be found until after the market crashed in 2008? Where were they before that when you know, the markets were heating up in mortgage-backed securities? Where was the Fed? Why didn't the Fed take the punch bowl away as they're supposed to do? I mean, you know, this is a pattern that has been repeating for years. I mean, the last time I can think of that the SEC was really focused on cracking down on wrongdoing on Wall Street was probably back, you know, in the 80s and they weren't even so great at it then, but at least they were better when it was clear that they were beginning. John Shadd, the head of the SEC, was leading a charge against insider trading, basically. But since then, it's been, you know, a pushover agency. The CFTC has had its moments of clairvoyance, for instance, when it went after the LIBOR scandal. But basically, it has been a pushover agency. The Justice Department clearly has not brought any criminal cases against anybody for what happened during the financial crisis. So, I mean, the fact that they're all looking at it, they look at things when the media starts making a big stink. And, of course, you know, in the heels of the 60 Minutes show on Sunday night, you know, now this is the subject where everybody is focused and they're going to, quote unquote, do their investigations. But the proof is in the pudding, Ian. I mean, how many times do these guys say they're going to look at things and then nothing ever comes of it? So I'm not going to hold my breath thinking that, you know, we're going to see a slew of people prosecuted for, quote unquote, illegal high frequency trading by co-locating their trading operations as close to the data centers as in New Jersey as they possibly can. I just don't, you know, I'm sure that is, they're going to not be able to find a case worth prosecuting there.
Well, William Cohen, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ian. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And likewise. Again, I've been speaking with William Cohen, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. He's a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, where he covers a variety of financial issues. His book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company. He also wrote The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Laissez Faire and Company. And his latest book out soon is The Price of Silence, which is about the 2006 and 2007 Duke Lacrosse scandal. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking with David Gleave, who first predicted weeks ago when the Malaysian airline first disappeared that it was deliberately flown into the remote southern Indian Ocean.